Should the Fed be doing more?
Investing, renting, sending your kid to college? Listen to the Marketplace Money podcast. Find it on iTunes or at marketplace.org/podcasts.
From APM in New York, good morning. I'm Jeremy Hobson. We learned this morning that France's economy flatlined in the third quarter and Germany's grew just 0.3%. Here in this country today, we'll find out how retailers did last month. All of this information is taken into account at the Federal Reserve as policymakers there try to live up to both of their mandates, price stability and full employment. One of those policymakers is Eric Rosengren, who heads the Federal Reserve Bank of Boston, and he is with us now. Good morning.
Good morning. Nice to be with you, Jeremy.
Great to have you. Well, let's start with the economy. I mean, how would you describe our economy right now, how it's doing?
Well, I would describe our economy as treading water. If I look at GDP, which are the goods and services produced in the economy slowed down. Much of that is because the global economy has slowed down and because there are significant concerns about fiscal austerity both here and abroad. Those concerns have caused both households and businesses to cut back on spending that they might otherwise be making. And as a result, if you look at the GDP report, I'd make the analogy that we're treading water but taking a few gulps in the lake.
So why didn't the Fed step in at its most recent meeting with more monetary stimulus?
It made sense to wait until we got this employment report to confirm that we were doing no better than treading water. And it makes sense to get a sense of what's happening in the global economy as well. But my own view is at this point we have enough information that has confirmed that it doesn't look like we're going to pick up in the second half of the year. My own expectation is that the second half of the year won't be much better than the first half because the drivers of fiscal austerity and European problems aren't likely to be resolved in the next two quarters, and that monetary policy shouldn't wait any further before reacting to the global slowdown that we've been encountering.
Now, you want the Fed to sort of change the way that it does these big bond purchases called quantitative easing, and instead of sort of setting the limits up front on how many bonds it's going to buy, you want your colleagues at the Fed to just keep buying until they see results in the labor market.
So the focus not only for quantitative easing, but I think also on any kind of forward guidance for how long interest rates stay low, should be focused on getting growth in income that is satisfactory and that results in a labor market that is improving. So I would want a substantial program if we did quantitative easing, and I would tie it to getting the kind of income growth that we want or tie it to getting clear improvements in the labor market.
Now, what about the risks that your counterparts on the other side of the ideological spectrum would bring up, which is that we may at some point have a big inflation problem and it could come quickly and without warning if you keep putting more stimulus into the economy?
We've been waiting for 4 years. We're still seeing an inflation rate below our 2% target. In order for it to change quickly, you'd have to see a very rapid expansion in lending. You'd start seeing evidence in banking markets. We're just not seeing that evidence.
Do you think that politics are at play right now? Is the Fed scared to act because it thinks that its actions will be seen as political?
An independent Federal Reserve should be focused on the business cycle, not the political cycle, and that's what I'm focused on.
Do you think your colleagues feel the same way?
Can't speak for anybody but myself.
How long do you think it's going to take until we are out of this economic slump that we've been in for the last several years?
It's going to be a number of years before we're back to full employment. I think the appropriate monetary and fiscal policies can make a big difference. But there's certainly things that we can't control. What happens in China and what kind of policies they do, we have no control over. What's happening in Europe, we have no control over. But in the absence of some of these other issues, I think taking the right policies, we will get much stronger growth than we would in the absence of those policies.
Eric Rosengren is president of the Federal Reserve Bank of Boston. Thank you so much for talking with us.
Thank you. I enjoyed the interview.
And you can hear an extended version of the interview, including whether Eric Rosengren thinks there's any historical precedent for the economic times we're in right now. It's at marketplace.org. And let's do the numbers. Stocks are higher in global trading this morning, up 0.5% in Tokyo, 0.8% right now in Frankfurt. On Wall Street yesterday, the Dow fell 38 points to close at 13,169.
Looking for a good read? Visit the Big Book blog at marketplace.org. Listen to author interviews and read excerpts from the Marketplace bookshelf. Online at marketplace.org/thebigbook.
So the official price tag for the London Olympics is about $15 billion. And while some tally up the benefits, some small business owners in London are already seeing red. Christopher Worth reports.
Lambert Souvenirs is exactly the kind of business you'd expect to benefit from the Olympics. A shot put throw from the Houses of Parliament, it sells all the memorabilia a tourist could ever ask for.
T-shirts, sweatshirts, keyrings, magnets, and pins.
Frey Derge works here. In the run-up to the Games, she says the store is stocked up on merchandise, expecting a flood of visitors, which it now regrets.
We're not selling anything. We're not selling our souvenirs. Everybody's complaining. Business is down by 55 to 60% because no customers are coming.
Complaints like hers can be heard all over London. It seems high hotel prices and the hassle of the Olympics have scared off many of the normal non-Olympic visitors. Mary Rance is the head of UK Inbound, a trade association for the tourism industry. She says August is usually a peak month for tourism in London, but close to 90% of tourism-related businesses are reporting losses due to lower-than-expected visitor numbers during the Games.
And obviously, as the number of visitors are down, obviously it means the bookings in hotels are down, the visits to attractions are down, so it has a sort of spiraling effect.
Spiraling all the way down to the little guy on the streets.
It's been a great Olympic for Britain, but not for us.
Arben Leshy draws portraits and caricatures on this sidewalk in London's West End shopping district. He says he'd usually have about 10 to 15 customers a day, but this summer he's had days when no one stops. In London, I'm Christopher Worth for Marketplace.
And finally, how famous is the face of the founder of Facebook? Not that famous, apparently. During the Olympic gold medal basketball game, NBC's camera panned the crowd and found the face of a guy that looked like Mark Zuckerberg. Here's the video from the website Deadspin.
We've got every executive of note, it seems, worldwide attending these games.
Well, it turns out it wasn't Zuckerberg the executive. It was actor Jesse Eisenberg, who played him in the movie The Social Network. In New York, I'm Jeremy Hobson. This is the Marketplace Morning Report. This is APM, American Public Media.
The world can be a confusing place for kids, and finding the words to explain it all can be tricky, too. Introducing Million Bazillion, a Webby-winning podcast from Marketplace that takes your kids on exciting adventures to answer the awkward and complex questions they have about money. Each week, we tackle hard-hitting inquiries from kid listeners like,
what is a college account and how does it work?
I want to know what unions are and what they are for.
Why does the U.S. have so much gold in Fort Knox and what do they use it for?
Help your kids understand how money fits into the world around us. Listen to Million Bazillion wherever you get your podcasts.